Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, Single, Not Stalled, Pursuing Sanctity in Your Singleness. This podcast is for Catholic women who find themselves living the single life, whether it by choice, vocation, or circumstance. Here we believe that this time is not just a waiting period, but a season rich with purpose, growth, and grace. Join your hosts, Monica and Katie, two sisters navigating the single life from different perspectives, as we dive into conversations about faith, friendship, professional growth, and finding joy in the everyday. Let's embrace this extraordinary journey together. Hello, Katie.
It's been a while since we did one of these. I think 2 months.
Welcome back. Yes. Welcome. You want to talk about the little break we took?
Yeah, so we took a break partly because summer's crazy and we were both like all over the place. I was all over the place, but in full transparency, which we talked about, I think, in the last episode, which was on leisure. So we're like, oh, perfect. I was like just so overwhelmed with the amount of travel I was doing, the amount of work I had on my plate, like just a lot of those things. And I was leaving to go take my 3-week theology philosophy course that I do every summer. And I was like, white flag, Monica, white flag. Like, I gotta raise it. We gotta take a break. Etc.
Yeah. I think that a lot of podcasts take breaks and stuff for different seasons. I think end of summer, beginning of fall is kind of a nice slow down reset. So we're back at it.
We are. We had a couple kind of fun things that happened in the break, which of course we didn't talk about, but I would say the biggest thing that happened in the break was our brother was ordained a priest in the start of August. And that was really huge, really special for the whole family. It was, probably one of the coolest experiences, at least personally for me, that I've had in my life.
It's hard to explain. I think in a wedding, there's a moment, right? And they exchange vows and you're like, they're married. Although I guess in a Catholic wedding, someone told me once who wasn't Catholic, they're like, it's a little anticlimactic because like they say their vows, but then they don't kiss for like a long time after. And then it's like, and now, so there's just like 2 moments. Yeah, right? And I'm like, yeah, I understand. Yeah, we do that. I get it. But what's interesting about the ordination is that there were, I found myself being like, is it now? Did it happen? Is that the moment? Because there were so many.
There were so many.
Really very beautiful moments where there were like steps in that direction or symbolism of the commitment he had made and the promises he was giving. And so it was very emotional. And I think to see kind of everyone rally around him and be so excited for him. And I just think he has been working towards this end for so long. And so I think to watch a sibling get what they like worked for, I'm going to get choked up. It's like, it is. I mean, it is really beautiful.
No, and it's true. And I think, you know, totally agree with you. Like for the wedding, there's a couple moments, but the thing that's interesting is a lot of the change that happens after the sacrament of marriage is internal or it's stuff that you don't see. Right. Whereas, yes, that's also true, obviously, for an ordination. But there were also a lot of suddenly external signs that we could see. Right. So right after an ordination, he can start blessing you. I mean, he could bless you as a deacon, but he can now bless you with ordained hands. And so to see all these people line up to get blessed by him was like super powerful. And then to watch him like bless our parents, bless our grandma. Like that was like, whoa, like so cool.
Yeah, it definitely felt very surreal. I would say like Joe being a priest and my friends who are priests, like the stages of their priesthood are different than the friends who are married. And I have this very good friend who just became a pastor at a church. And I had this moment where I was like, whoa, it's like the moment I saw my friends become parents and I'm like, this is beautiful, but this is heavy. Like this is going to be a lot. You're like, it's one thing to be married. It's another thing to be married with kids. And you're like, whoa, like here we go. Right. And like, he's a priest and he's like popping around his church. And like, it's cute. But now like you have an entire parish in your hands. And so these kind of moments, right. So to see Joe like, celebrate his first mass and do his first blessings. You're like, oh, wow. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. Like this, you can do this. It's interesting. This is happening. So, I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. Let's share our favorite moments from it and then we can move on. But I think for me, probably one of my favorite moments of the whole, I mean, there was a lot, but one that really stands out and I tell a lot of people about is at the end of his first mass, one of the things that he did is he, and it's a tradition in the church where you give the mother the cloth that was used to cleanse the hands after the bishop has anointed them. Mm-hmm. And then you give the father of the new priest the stole of his first confession. And our brother Joe, which is crazy, had his first mass the same day he was ordained. He was ordained at 10 in the morning. He had his first mass at 7 p.m. And in between there, he got in confessions and all sorts of other things. Anyway, so he comes down to explain to the congregation and to my parents, like what he's gifting them and why he's gifting that to them. And he said that the pious tradition that we have in the church, which is such a beautiful tradition, and if you haven't heard of this, get your Kleenex ready. But is that when the mother and the father, when they die, they are buried with that item. So my mom with the cloth that was used to cleanse his hands, my dad with the stole from his first confession. And then when they stand before God the Father and God the Father can say to them, what did you give me? They can say, sorry, Sam, I'm going to cry because I think it's so beautiful. But they can say to God the Father, I gave you my son like you gave us yours.
Mm.
Well, Joe says this and all of us are bawling. Like my parents are bawling. All of us are bawling. The pastor of that parish who Joe had been with for, you know, the last like 6 months or so, he's crying and like he's seen this a million times. Like it was really, really special. And Joe had both of the items embroidered with his name and the date of his ordination. So it was very special. My mom was especially very touched. My dad didn't even know it was coming. My mom had seen it before for the mom, but had not seen the stole for the father. So it was, to me, that was my favorite moment because it was just so beautiful. And it was just such a testament to like thinking of even the Old Testament, right? Where Hannah prays and prays and prays for a child. And then what does she do as soon as she gets the child? She gives it back to God. And she's like, thanks so much for a child. Here, he's yours now. And I was like, that's what these parents do when they have a son who's a priest. Like, he's really no longer theirs. He's God's. He's those churches.
Yeah.
And like, that's the reality because we're generous and gave him back. So,
yeah, I think it's a very concrete representation of what is true for all of us and all parents, and is that these children are not yours. They're gifted to you. They're like, they're on loan. Even the ones who don't become priests or don't become, like, their lives should always be for God. And so, you know, I think that kind of segues, I think, really nicely into our topic today, because I think in light of just sort of recent events, I think Katie and I wanted to talk a little bit about Charlie Kirk and his whole kind of mission and brand was to, I saw an interview where they asked him what, if he died, what would he want to be remembered for? And he said his faith. And so I think we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that, right? Kind of remembering that our children one day, for those who are getting married, or your spiritual children, or our own lives are always for God. No matter like what we do in this world, in this life, what you do for a profession or your state in life, it's always for God. And so we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that and the idea of dialogue and the importance of dialogue in the world today.
Right.
Because I was really struck after this, after his death, but then also a lot of other things happened that week, right? Like the stabbing of that woman, that poor woman on the subway, the death of Charlie Kirk. There were a school shooting. There were a lot of things that happened that week, but I was really impressed. Impressed usually sounds positive, but it wasn't a positive thing. But I was shocked. I don't know if that's the right word, but just the amount of hate and like infighting there was, and seemingly people couldn't come to at least a common consensus about anything.
Mm-mm.
Right? Like people couldn't even come to a common consensus that like the death, the killing of another person is wrong.
Yeah.
Like even that people were like, oh, he deserved to die. Like, what? No.
Yeah.
No, he's supposed to be murdered.
Oh, yeah.
The woman on the subway, even. Some people started a GoFundMe for her killer. Like, I'm so confused, right? Like, what? Like, oh, it wasn't his fault. Who wielded the screwdriver? Like, what?
Okay. Yeah, you know, I mean, gosh, we could go in so many directions with this.
But yeah, let's start with your point first, I think.
Because I want to talk about Charlie Kirk, but more than that, I've just had so many conversations, right? Because like as a therapist, a lot of people trying to process the heaviness of this world. Mm-hmm. I myself struggled with this. I think more so because like he has a wife who is like, he's my age and he has babies. Like
he was at Harper the same time Monica was at Harper.
Like
we grew up in the same town.
It's just so sad to me on a human level. And I think what's difficult, and yes, what Katie and I really want to talk about today is to dialogue and to meet people who are not like you. And essentially that's what Charlie Kirk did, right? He engaged, for the most part, he's human, in civil dialogue with people who thought differently than him. And you don't have to agree with his political stances. You don't have to like him. You don't have to agree with the fact that everyone's screaming that he's a martyr and really making this very political or making this very theological. You don't have to agree with any of that. But I think that unless we can all agree that this is wrong, fundamentally, mm-hmm. unless we can agree that taking the life of another human being is wrong, mm-hmm. I worry as a society. That's where I went, right? And I had a lot of really difficult conversations with people. I had really emotional conversations with like very close loved ones because I just, it's hard.
I think what's interesting is while you and I have two very, very different professions, something like this is heavy for the both of us.
Oh, yeah.
Because I spent, like, I think I've seen the video of those two deaths probably 100 times.
Yeah, I had the privilege of stepping away from social media.
Right, and I don't.
Right.
And I think, so that was really heavy. And then I will tell you, too, for me, it was really heavy just to see all of this and to see it out and, like, that. I thought it was very interesting that Instagram wasn't blocking any of this imagery, which they block a ton of other imagery, which is like really.
Don't even get me started. We could talk about that. The fact that you can even see this.
Well, and that it was everywhere. I mean, and I understand it would probably be really hard to like rein in by the time it went viral. Yeah. Like, because everybody was reposting it. But at the same time, it was so heavy that by Friday, Thursday night, I actually texted my whole team and I said, if you're drowning in this, please take tomorrow off, go touch grass and hug your loved ones. Cause I'm like, cause for me too, as a boss, I sat there thinking like, I'm so overwhelmed by this and I don't have to be on Instagram as much as some of my team members do.
Right.
Based on the client load they have, et cetera. And I was like, I don't have children, but a lot of my team members have children. So, you know, envisioning that. So I was like, please take off. Right. But I think it's heavy. And I think, but I think it's also heavy in a good way because it forces us to stop and think about things.
Well, if we choose to, we could turn away or we could despair and be like, cause there was, I would say I had a solid 2 days of like, I really struggled to pull myself out of a really low mood and to not give in to like, well, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. So what the hell's the point of any of this? This is insane. I cannot fathom that this, and just thinking about, just about everything and how heavy it was. And then I think being able to like, take that deep breath and gosh, I think more and more seeing like what a privilege it is to be Christian because like, look, whether or not any of this is real or true or whatever, maybe we're living in a simulation, all this stuff. Like I am given the privilege to make meaning of this and to not carry it alone and to not despair because my faith has afforded me an everlasting hope when the hope of this world feels far. And so it is such a privilege to be Christian. Like,
Yeah.
Given this faith is a privilege.
It's a really interesting point. I have a really good friend who's an atheist, and it hit her really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard. And I didn't really put two and two together, but it's true. Like, for me, I'm like, okay, like, yes, obviously sad. Murder of another human being, murder of other human beings, bad, sad, all this stuff. But I also can see good that comes out of evil, because I know that story. Like, I've seen that story multiple times in Christianity, in the Bible, right? That kind of a thing. But for her, it's really hard to make sense of all these things, because she has a really strong core, I would say, human virtue.
Sure.
So for her, this was really hard. And how do I talk to my kids about this and all that kind of stuff? But, you know, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think, and it's just because I have a lot of people in my life who are, they don't share my religion, or they don't share my political view,
mm-hmm.
or they don't share necessarily my philosophical or moral perspective, or they didn't like Charlie Kirk,
sure.
or they didn't whatever, or they're having a hard time, which I mean, look, I'll be totally honest. I have a hard time separating Charlie Kirk's Christian values from him supporting Trump so much. And this isn't political at all, but in the memorial, Trump was like, Charlie would want me to forgive my enemies. I won't. I hate them. And I'm like, Trump, my God, man. Like,
at least he recognizes.
Yeah, he's acknowledging it. He's
not
like,
right.
He's like, I don't like them. And I'm like, okay, cool. So this is part of the problem that we actually do as Christians. I don't actually know what Trump's religion is, but as Christians and kind of in memory of Charlie, this idea that, like, we actually are called to love, to will the good of the other in this deepest sense of love. That's what we mean by love. And I think people mm-hmm. have a hard time understanding. It's not this, like, warm, gooey sentiment where we have to, like, hug the person and be like, I love you. Mm-hmm. It's like to love, to truly deeply love is to will the good of the other.
Yeah.
That is what we are called to do as Christians. And that is going to require us to meet people where they are, as they are, in their differences to us. It's exactly what Christ did. It is that's what he did. He went to the sinners, he went to the peripheries, he went to the outcasts, and helped them come back around, right? And so we can't do that unless we're willing to engage in dialogue, in civil, respectful dialogue.
Yeah. And I think, you know, afterwards, I was like, I sat with it the whole weekend and I got off social media. I was off pretty much Friday, Saturday, Sunday for the most part, because I was just like, it was really heavy on me. And it was actually my birthday weekend too. So it was like a bummer.
Womp, womp.
I was like, whatever, womp, womp. Like, actually Friday, I went over and saw friends and we'd planned to watch a movie. And they're like, what do you want to watch? And I was like, okay, it's been a really hard week for me. It's been really heavy. So I actually want to watch an old musical because I was like, I know I'm going to rest with that and I enjoy it. And
what
I,
do you want?
You know, we watched The Harvey Girls with Judy Garland.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
But I was like, I mean, there's a ton of new movies that I want to see, but so many of them have, like, really heavy themes that I was like, I cannot right now. But I sat with it a lot in my prayer, and actually Sunday was my day of recollection, so I sat with that a ton during my day of recollection, and I was like, why am I so impacted by this? Like, I didn't know Charlie. I disagreed with him on a lot of things. I agreed with him also on a lot of things. I never went to one of his rallies. I've never seen an entire talk of his, like, whatever, or hardly any. And, but I was like, I think it's this fact that, like, there's so much hate in the world and there's very little love, even from the Christians, right? Even these Christians who are like, oh my gosh, like, he's a martyr. Find and kill the person who killed him. Wait, what? What? Do you know what I mean? So I had posted on my Instagram, like, my kind of thoughts about it. And I was like, because I just kept coming back to this idea that, like, Jesus loved Peter and Judas the same amount. Or maybe not the same amount, but, like, nobody knew, right? He didn't hate Judas, right? He wasn't like, you're scum, right? He loved and died for Judas, just like he loved and died for Peter and John. And I think, you know, if we really take seriously our Christian faith, then we truly believe Christ died for Charlie Kirk and Tyler, his killer.
Mm.
Right? He died for the woman on the subway, Irena, who was killed, and the man who stabbed her to death. Like, he, Christ died for both and loves them both infinitely.
Right.
And I think we lose, I don't know, somehow in our world today, like, we're like, oh yeah, God loves everyone. But then, like, you don't agree with me and, like, God probably doesn't love you. Like, no. Like, yeah. No.
Yeah. I think we're confused with what love means. I think that there's such limitation to our language and to the human experience that we struggle with understanding justice and mercy coexisting. We struggle with this concept of loving your enemy or turning the other cheek, and this idea that, and so this is actually a reflection point. I saw this person pop up on my Instagram who, I don't know, I think she's kind of a woo-woo witch. I'm like, why are you on here? But probably because I get captivated and I'm like, what do you have to say? But I actually liked her perspective on this, where she goes, she was like, I had to reflect because if I was going to say, like, this person who took the life of Charlie, from what we know so far, thought that he was doing a moral good to some degree, right? That this was, he's the equivalent of a Nazi and he needs to be eradicated to save people, right? And this is where we start to trend into moral relativism. And she was saying, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to be like, shame on him, that's disgusting. And then she goes, but that's actually a reflection point of, I am no different. What are the times that I bend morals to fit what feels good to me? Or what are the times that I say, like, if he was given the death penalty and I cheered, really? Like, is that not also the same that I'm now saying someone should die because of what I believe, convicted, why? Like, and all these, and she's like, all of this is actually, she's like, you have to turn off the clutter of the rest of the world and tune into your own heart. And so, like, that's kind of the challenge here, right? Like, if you weren't, to some degree, if you weren't affected by any of the things that happened a few weeks ago, we should maybe check in with ourselves a little bit, right? Or if we're cheering for the death of someone, or even for this assassin to be given the death penalty, that should not be cheered. Right. I'm not speaking to whether or not it's politically or morally correct. It shouldn't be celebrated. Taking the life of another person should never be celebrated. And It's something that we have to kind of, like, tune into our hearts with and ask ourselves, like, where am I? It's a what's that called? Like, it's a touch point, or it's a testing. Yeah. Of myself, like, and thinking about whether,
I think.
And whether or not I'm willing to engage in kind of civil dialogue with people, or am I just avoiding encountering other people who think and believe differently than me.
So, you know, so the whole thing is fascinating, and watching it unfold on Instagram was also, it was also fascinating as much as it was depressing. But a lot of people posted, you know, pro Charlie Kirk, anti Charlie Kirk, whatever, and then lost followers as a result, right? So Forrest Frank, Forrest Frank is?
Yeah, he's a
singer. Forrest Frank, right? This big Christian singer. He's got the song Lemonade out there, like the whole deal, right? Lost 30,000 followers after he posted about how horrible it was that Charlie Kirk died. That to me was the most mind-boggling thing, because
that's interesting.
You're not following Forrest Frank unless you're a Christian. Because he doesn't sing secular music and he's a Christian. He sings Christian music.
Hilarious.
Talking all about Jesus and God and being saved and loving others.
Funny.
And Jesus makes lemonade out of lemons of days and, like, all this kind of stuff. Like,
cute.
30,000 Christians.
So this is what I find funny. And this is something I noticed within myself. I absolutely can see it within my clients. I think as human beings, we prefer extremes. We prefer black and white. I prefer things to be put in boxes because I can better understand them. And so we have a hard time for that coffee.
Filling my coffee.
We have a hard time, I think, walking in balance between guarding my heart and mind and what influences I allow to come in, and completely shutting out any alternative perspective. What happens, and so this is what I'm hearing, right? When you say that they unfollowed Forrest Frank, it's like, I can't tolerate anyone who thinks differently than me, so you got to go. And there's a difference between that rhetoric and that's not good for my heart and mind, and I'm going to limit the content that I see in that, which is, I kind of think that's I think where the balance comes in of like, well, I'm scared of the influence someone else could have on me because they think differently, and therefore I need to get rid of it. But the truth is, an alternative perspective or someone expressing their Christianity in this particular way that doesn't jive with the way you do it isn't a threat to you.
Right.
This is not, they're not like, how shallow your roots, if that would be true.
Yeah. And I agree. Like, I am all for unfollowing people or brands or whatever that are difficult for your like mental state. But I think too, you know, to stop and consider, like, if you unfollowed someone as a result of this, maybe it's time to take that to your prayer and do a heart check in. Like, why? What was it about that made you think this person and their content was so dangerous that I couldn't follow them? And, you know, and it's interesting. So when I posted my video, I talked a lot about Christianity because I was coming from this Christian perspective. I was talking about this, but my atheist friend commented on it. And she was like, you know, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in any of this. Besides that though, I value our friendship and we're very good friends. And like, I agree with the sentiment basically, you know, like, yeah, why can't we just love one another? Why are we, you know, this kind of a thing. Etc. And so I was like, yeah, like I agree. Like, she and I don't agree on many things, but we do agree on this. Like, we do agree that everyone should be free to have their own opinions and we should be able to dialogue about them in a thoughtful way. Right. And often our dialogue comes over beers. Like, we'll sit and have beers and talk and whatever. But I think, you know, like, we need that in our world. But it's interesting. She even posted then on her, after I posted mine, she posted on her account, something similar, but saying like, she didn't like Charlie, da, 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 all these reasons. Cause he was, you know, all these things, all the isms that she attaches to them.
Yikes.
Or phobias.
All the phobics and isms.
All the phobics she attached. But then reiterating, no one should kill another person, right? And she lost like 300 followers.
Wild.
And I was like, what? Like, she didn't even say anything that was like, I mean, other than maybe you stopped following her because you like Charlie Kirk, and she didn't. But she didn't say anything that was like, oh, no, like, that's off the wall.
Yeah.
So she and I were writing back and forth, and like, we were messaging back and forth. And I was like, Allie, like, I'm so sorry, you know, about all this or whatever. And she was like, I just don't understand. Like, why would I lose followers over this? And I was like, because people are afraid, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know what they are.
There's so many things. Well, I think we just live in such a mentally fragile time. You make me feel uncomfortable and you gotta go. I can only have people in my life who make me feel comfortable. And it's like, then don't be a Christian. I don't know what to tell you. Christianity is uncomfortable. What we were called to do is uncomfortable. Being set across from other people in the world is uncomfortable. And if you don't like that, there's plenty of other religions that don't require that of you. I don't know. Like, truthfully, it is uncomfortable. No one said that this would be a comfortable process. Like, if our own Savior was murdered, what you think, and Christ says this to the weeping women, right? If this is what's done to the greenwood, what shall be done to the dry?
We're the dry. People.
Okay. A lot. We're dry. All right. So I think we have to just be, we just have to have a fortitude to really, I think, bring Christ into that process of like, it's okay that you struggle maybe with dialogue with people who think differently than you, or that it makes you uncomfortable, or that maybe you struggle to navigate those conversations. But I would invite you to do the research and to pray about it and to bring Christ into those conversations. And I don't mean being like, well, Jesus said so. I mean, internally bringing Christ into that conversation for you. you know, because I think there's another part. Is it the letter? Paul, I think it's in one of the letters where it's like, don't like prep to defend yourself on trial. Like the Holy Spirit will work through you. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm not going to exactly get that quote or scripture correct. But
yeah,
the sentiment is that like we actually need to trust God a little bit more in our lives and give him opportunities to work. And what a beautiful way. Like we're supposed to be instruments to the peripheries and to these people. Like that's what it means, like to be salt and leaven and to be light. And so we have to like really let Christ work through us, rely less on yourself, let him work through you in these conversations with people, right? And I think when you do that, when you actually say, instead of an ism or a phobia or this box I've put you in, I choose to see you as a person. Tell me your story. Tell me your perspective. Mm-hmm. What we get to do is we get to see their humanity. And this is why Charlie Kirk was killed, because this individual doesn't see his humanity. He sees these boxes he put him in, and these boxes are threatening, and these boxes actually detach us from our humanity, therefore mm-hmm. making it easier to kill, objectify, treat poorly, all of the things. And mm-hmm. I really think as a society and as people, we need to return to our humanity. And the only way we're going to do that is if we encounter people and encounter their humanity.
Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes too, that means being really vulnerable and maybe saying things like, when you know, maybe you want to have a conversation, or maybe it's going in that direction with somebody who you're like, dang, we don't think alike. Sometimes I think it's as simple as being vulnerable and being like, I don't think we agree on this, but like, can we like have a civil dialogue about it and just talk about it? Cause like, I'm really curious to hear your opinion, right? Like, that can be so good. And you might be really shocked or really impressed with like the results or what people are saying. Like there's so many, you know, I see this all the time, you know, with this friend of mine that I've been talking about. Like there are so many things that we agree on that I would not have realized if we weren't talking, right? Like we were both teachers at the same time and we were talking, she was like, oh, do you tell your kids like not, are they not allowed to read certain books or whatever? And I was like, I mean, I don't tell them to read water, like whatever. And I was like, I think it's really important for people to read things to form good opinions about stuff. Like how will you know what you think if you don't read about it? Mm-hmm. Like, and I said, I think freedom's really important. She's like, oh, I think freedom's like ultimately important. And I was like, cool. So we right. both agree on that. I too think freedom is really, really, really important. You know, mm-hmm. I just see it informed by a few different things than you do, but like still, you know,
yeah.
like
yeah, yeah, yeah,
we can both agree on that.
Yeah.
You know, and think that's great. And so, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I think that, yeah, it really is the only way. I thought what was kind of beautiful were all of these people who were coming out talking about how Charlie Kirk in his approach influenced them to come back to their faith.
Hmm.
And, you know, because I was like, yeah, like him just simply having a conversation with someone, you just don't know, like, you just don't know God's plan. And that mm-hmm. by simply having a conversation with someone, or someone overhearing your conversation, or someone seeing you witness the faith, right? We're called to be Christ himself, which means like we have to be so attuned to our faith and to Christ that it's a reflection from us, a pouring forth from us, right? We don't need to be lawyers who can debate the merits of our beliefs. We have to be reflections of Christ. And mm-hmm. we don't know that in mm-hmm. speaking to these people who are different from us, or encountering people where they are, what Christ has in store for them. We don't know.
Yeah. No, it's true. And all this was making me think, and then especially seeing all the people posting me, like, I'm going back to church for the first time. Like, you know, we're seeing the lines outside of churches that first Sunday. Like, I was really impressed by that. And I was like, oh gosh, I hope this lasts. It was really making me think too, like, how do I witness to the faith to friends, to people in subtle ways, not like, have you heard about our Lord Jesus Christ? in a way that invites conversation and dialogue.
Yeah.
Right. And it was really making me think too, you know, we started talking about this at the start of the thing, but like our brother Joe, right, who's now ordained a priest, he runs around in his cassock all the time. It's just really telling. So he can't go anywhere without someone coming up to him and asking him a question, or asking him for a blessing, or, you know, whatever. And even he was saying, like, he thought, you know, he's hearing lots of confessions now. He says he hears about 2 hours of confessions a day.
Yeah.
And which is crazy. Awesome. But he said, you know, when he started, he thought he was going to be every now and again, there would be one who was like, oh, it's been 20 years, Father.
Yeah.
And he said, no, it's
daily.
It's like multiple times every day.
Wow.
People who are like coming back. And he's like, this is so good. But I was thinking, like, you know, here he goes to like a restaurant and some random like tattooed man comes up and he's like, Father, I got a rosary. Can you bless it? And he's like, what? Yeah, sure. Mm. And he's like, oh, cool. Can I introduce you to my girlfriend too? Like, I think I'm going to marry her. And he's like, yeah, sure. Like, whatever, like all these things. Right. Yeah. And he obviously does that because he is an outward sign of his Christianity because he wears his cassock and he's clearly a priest. But how do we like wear a cassock in that sense to be subtly inviting this dialogue? Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that too could be something for us to consider. Like, how can we, like, how do we bring the light of Christ to others in a way that's most authentic to ourselves, right? Like, for me, that's not going to be wearing, like, Jesus saved you t-shirts,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it might be something else, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think that could be a good takeaway assignment because I'm sitting here being like, well, I think I have some ideas, but I wonder, it does require a level of introspection to be like, how do I show up in the world? How do people perceive me? Would they be able to identify me as a Christian without me having to say it? Like, you know, this idea of like, oh, something's a little different about them. Or like, oh, that's interesting, right? Without me having to be like, hi, I like Jesus. Like, you know, it's funny, actually, someone asked me that last night. They asked me if I was a Christian. And I was like, what a random thing to ask me at a bar. Like, hey, man, are you a Christian? I was like, what? Yes. They're like, cool, me too. And I was like, okay, good talk. Like,
great. It's glad to be bonded over that.
No, yeah.
It was actually it's interesting too. The other big thought I had after all of this, which I've been trying to implement, which is very difficult for me, but I was right afterwards, I think it was like the following week, I was standing in line at Target to make a return and there was all these people around me. And the woman in front of me was clearly Jewish. Lovely, pregnant woman, Jewish. And I was like, her hair was beautiful and clearly a wig because, you know, if you're Orthodox Jewish, the women wear a wig. But her hair was beautiful. She was pregnant. And I really wanted to say something to her, like, you look lovely or you're glowing because she just looked great. And I didn't. And afterwards, and because she was on her phone and the person behind me was on their phone and I was trying not to be on my phone. And afterwards, I was like, I think I need to take those small, maybe they're promptings from the Holy Spirit. Maybe they're a nudge from my guardian angel and say something.
Sure.
Because, you know, when I posted that video, several people who follow me who are Jewish, who I know like fairly well from online interactions were like, yeah, but it's really, really hard when people are so against you and your religion.
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so anyway, so it was just making me think like, how can I, like, what is Christianity? Christianity is love. What is God? God is love, right? So how do I bring love into the world so that the world is a little bit of a better place so that maybe in 10 years from now, should God forbid something like this happen again, there are less people who are rejoicing in the death of a person.
Sure. Well, and I think that is ultimately, I think the only thing I can really control is my actions and my reactions to things, right? And as much as I would love to be able to influence public policy and politics and hate and rhetoric and blah, 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 all the things, I can really only control how I love others and how I show up in my community and how I show up in the lives of the people around me. And there's something particularly beautiful about being single that actually affords us, I think, a wider scope, right? Parents are a little limited to like really nurturing their children, which I do think like that is so, that will so profoundly change our society, the way we raise our children. But I think also as single people, and we're probably out and about and moving and maybe encountering more people, or even those who are dating, there's an apostolate in dating. That we need to show up in relationships with honesty and sincerity of who we are, right? As reflections of Christ, and engage in those difficult conversations, because you are going to encounter a lot of people who are different or who have just never heard particular perspectives before. Like, I think I was under this assumption that because Christianity is so widespread, a lot of the beliefs I held were common. And I'm like, oh, you, what do you mean you've never heard this before? What do you mean you don't know? Whoa, really? Like,
you got to read that book, From Christendom to Apostolic Age or Apostolic Mission or whatever, by Father Shaw. Because it talks about that, how, like, yeah, it's true. Like, when our grandparents were growing up, even when our parents were growing up, there was a commonly held, like, moral standard
sure.
that people, for the most part, agreed with. There were a few outliers who were like, no, it's cool to get high, like, whatever, right? But for the most part, like, people agreed. But now we live in, like, back in the Roman days, we live in this time in which it's like, no, we don't have any shared common moral core. People don't believe in natural law. And so it's, in a certain way, easier to dialogue because anything goes. So, like, let's just talk about it because, like, whatever. Like, who are you to judge me? Like, this is what I believe. What do you believe?
Sure.
But at the same time, it's a lot harder because there isn't this starting moral ground to go from.
Yeah. Or even just thinking about, because Katie, you and I talked about this, and maybe we can talk about it next time because we're running out of time today. But, was talking to someone who's very near and dear to me, and the idea of the prodigal son returning and there being rejoicing, or the idea that the lost sheep being found was a good thing, was confusing to them. And I was like, wait, what? Like, of course, all of heaven rejoices when that lost sheep is found. And I, as someone who has been striving and practicing this Christianity my whole life, would never be like, you got in last minute, are you kidding me? Like, I would be like, thank god, I was worried about you. I was worried, I was watching, and I was like, well, the time is running out, like, yeah. You know, any day now. But, you know, and that concept of Christianity was lost on them, and I was like, wow, but why? Like, what have we done as a Christian society to make you think that, like, you coming back, or you finding, or you having a wayward path and then leaving that and turning from that, wouldn't be rejoiced? Like, yeah.
But I think, okay, well, this is like rabbit holes we could fall down. But I do think when you look at the youth today, I think there is a resurgence in understanding, like, we want heaven crowded. I want everyone in heaven with me.
Yeah.
I think we're starting to see this, but I do agree. I think there are definitely some Christians who are like, you don't deserve heaven.
Right.
But like,
or there's a level of
God died for all of them.
I think because we can kind of create our own bubbles, there's this we give off a vibe of like
us versus them.
Elitism and exclusivity and us versus you. And it's like, oh,
yeah, which is a heresy. There? Just saying.
There you go. Level it. Tell us, girl.
I mean, but that was a heresy for a while, that there's like an elect, right? And there are some Christian denominations, I guess, that do believe that, right? That there's a certain number of elect that get in and the rest, like, too damn bad.
Well, this is the whole sentiment of you have to be Catholic to get to heaven. I'm like, that's not true. And this, what we say is that there is no salvation except through Jesus Christ. And what a lot of Christians have interpreted that to mean is that you have to accept Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior. Or what some Catholics have interpreted that to mean is that you have to be Catholic. And that's not what any of that means. What that means is that none of us have salvation if not through the death of Christ on the cross, period. None of us are getting in if that had not happened. We're all getting in through Christ in that way. And I think that we've kind of lost this idea of, like, I think, and I don't think it was malicious, but we want everyone to be Christian or to be this or to be that, instead of kind of walking with them. Like, that takes, there's an urgency, or there's an exclusivity, or there's this or that. And, like, I think we have to be comfortable with walking with people and encountering people and with things taking time. Like, if it takes a lifetime, thank God. If it takes a day, thank God. Fine. It's not my time. It's God's time.
Right. And I think, you know, to be clear, right, like, the church, we do teach that there's no salvation outside of the Catholic Church. But what that looks like doesn't mean you were attending a Catholic church every Sunday and were confirmed and had all your sacraments in there, right? That like it, you also can have the desire for those kinds of things, or you can understand that. And it might be even last minute or something that like the church that Christ founded was the Catholic Church. Therefore, that is the earthly instrument to get people to heaven, or obviously
sort of. Christ, yeah. People. Bishop Barron actually is going to be able to articulate this better than Katie and I. He has a really great kind of series on that, because there's a complexity to it. Like you don't have to be a devout practicing Catholic to get to heaven. I think we need to be clear about that. None of us get to decide who goes where.
Right. Exactly. But I think I agree. And we got to go because I got another call. But so stay tuned. We'll be back. I'm sure we'll be talking about many more things in the months ahead. So that's it this week for Single Not Stalled. We hope this episode gave you new insights and a renewed sense of purpose in your daily life. Wherever you are on your journey, remember that God is with you, and this season is filled with opportunities to grow, flourish, and make an impact. If you're loving the podcast, please take a moment to rate and review it. It helps more women like you find this community, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. We will see you next time. Keep living fully and walking boldly in faith.